Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of the Damhorse Toys Family Podcast. My name is Chris Damhorse, and on today's show, we have Lori Savage Grayson, speech-language pathologist and consultant and founder, director, and owner of the Children's Communication Center in Tallahassee, Florida. Lori brings her 30 years of experience in speech-language pathology to the show today to talk about our young children and their speech and language development. So without further ado, let's go to the interview. Okay, Lori, hey, welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you had a moment to sit down with us here. We have a ton of information for you guys out there. Lori and I have been going over some of the information, and we have got a chock-full show this afternoon. So we're going to jump right into it. And the first question I have for you, and it's such a basic question and one that you brought to my attention, was what is speech and what is language? And it's going to be important to differentiate the two. Can you do that for us?
Sure. Thanks, Chris. First, we want to look at speech as the verbal means of communicating. So how we use our speech sounds, our voice, our fluency, and the rhythm of our speech. So basically, how clear we are speaking for others to hear us and understand us. Some people refer to that as, you know, a parrot has speech. He can talk, but doesn't have language. So that language would be what we understand and what we use during communication. So that includes the shared rules for vocabulary and the meaning of words and grammar, how we're putting our words together to communicate with other people. And then, of course, we have oral language, which is listening and speaking, and then we have written language, which is reading and writing. And so those would be the basic differences between speech and language.
Okay.
And you
can have problems with speech or with language, is that right?
You can have problems with speech sound development, with oral language, with speech, sound, and oral language development. So nothing is mutually exclusive, and they can coexist in many different forms.
So then you had also mentioned, too, that there's another element, pragmatics, that's in there?
Right. Pragmatic language is how we use our language and how we use, even if we have a limited vocabulary or limited grammar, how we might use gestures if we're a very young child, but how we use it and communicate with others. And I think further on into the program, I outlined the three parts of pragmatic language, and we can go over that when we get there.
Okay, so these are kind of the three core things that you focus on as a professional when you're counseling or helping a child that has particular speech or language or pragmatic issues. Okay, great. So let's go into really, I think, kind of the heart of things. And basically, speech and language milestones, what you can do to facilitate early speech language development in your child, the basics that parents are looking for when their children start to speak. Because I know as a parent myself, it's like, wow, is that normal? Should they be talking more? Or you'll run across another child and that child will be the same age, but they'll be speaking more clearly. And then you have you're second guessing your own child and where they are. So let's go over some of the milestones. And we were talking about this a little bit before. We're going to break this out pretty much between like 0 and 1, and then we're going to take it all the way up to age 5, right? And then you're going to kind of go through the milestones, and then what we as parents can do to kind of facilitate those skills at that particular age group, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think, you know, the point you brought up about as a parent, we're always comparing, even though we're told not to, either our children to each other
right.
or our children to other children that, you know, maybe their peers, that it's really important as a parent to remember that there are age ranges and that they're not absolutes.
Okay.
And that, you know, children move through the stages of speech and language development in a systematic way, but the exact ages may vary from child to child. So what we look for are the ranges, are these developmental milestones being reached within what we consider to be the expected age ranges, and then help parents see that, you know, sometimes parents will come in with a child and say, my child is not talking. And what we see is that maybe the child has significant speech sound problems, and so the parents aren't identifying those sounds as words. But let's get back to, you know, the birth to three and go through the first year, and then we can talk about some of the other problems of the older child once they are talking. So
okay.
For each age range, we're looking at how the child hears and understands, and then we're looking at the expressive aspect. So for the birth to three range, we're looking for children who startle to loud sounds. And usually you'll see that closer to the 3 age, the 3 month range.
Okay.
Because at birth, you know, babies sleep through a lot of noise. And so we wouldn't expect them to startle every time somebody walks in and out, although we all do tiptoe in and out of most of the baby's rooms.
But right.
Startling to loud noises, that they quiet and smile when they're spoken to, so they're attending to you.
Okay.
That they recognize their parents' voice. Compared to a stranger.
Okay.
And that expressively that they start making sounds. So when they're between birth and 3 months, we usually call that cooing. You have that nice melodic vowel sounds, just different little baby sounds. And that they have different cries for different needs. And, of course, it always takes us a while to figure that out.
Right.
You can't always differentiate that.
Yep.
Are they hungry? Are they wet? What do they need? And that they smile when they see you. And again, these skills develop not from, you know, starting at birth, but moving into the 3 month age range.
Okay.
And then between the 4 to 6 month age range, you'll start seeing the infant move their eyes in the direction of a sound, respond to changes in the tones of voices. They might notice toys that make sounds, and so they might start attending to those little gym things that are hanging over their head that they can swat or pay attention to music more at that age.
Okay.
And then expressively, we start hearing babbling, which now gives us the early consonants of P, B, and M mixed in with some vowel sounds. And then I think the all-famous, you know, belly laugh comes in somewhere in that time frame where you really can tell that they're laughing at something that occurred.
Okay.
And that when they're vocalizing, they sound happy and unhappy, which before, you know, you might have had to listen more to the tone or you might have to really look at the context, but now you really can see the displeasure and the excitement. And if you listen to a child at this age, you might actually hear them making more sounds when they're left alone, kind of exploring their sound development, and then also, of course, responding to you with more sounds, you know, their early babbling.
Right, right, okay.
And then at 7 months to a year, I think you really start seeing some big changes, and you know, by then your child might be starting to be sitting up and starting to do more activities with their toys, and so you'll see that they enjoy social games. You might start playing patty cake and peekaboo, that they actually now turn and look in the direction of sound, so they localize to the sound, not just move their eyes as they did when they were, you know, several months younger, but now they'll actually localize to the sound.
Okay.
They listen when they're spoken to, and they're going to start recognizing words for common items. And so when you say, you know, something about their cup or you're putting their shoe on or you've got the book, that they actually are understanding those words and those concepts, those early concepts. And then expressively, they're going to start babbling with long and short groups of words that might sound like they're doing early talking. And so you'll start hearing the melody. You'll hear different sound combinations. They may use speech or non-crying sounds to get your attention. So you'll know now more clearly what they want and that they're trying to get your attention, because it's going to be a little more exact in terms of directed at you. And they're going to start using gestures to communicate. So they'll start waving, they'll start pointing to things as if to ask what. They might start throwing kisses when people are leaving And of course, these are all things that you're going to have modeled for them and practiced with them, and then they're going to start using them on their own. Because the way we learn, whether it's early vocalization or their motor and gesture skills, and then eventually speaking, is by imitation and by having models around us. It should always be something fun, you know, a positive experience. A lot of parents, I think, that are new to being around very young children aren't sure what all the different sounds mean and, and how to respond to them. But I think there's almost a, with a lot of people, you know, just babies are cute, and so you're going to be in their faces and you're going to be talking back, and that's what you want. Even though they're not talking yet, they are communicating, and I think that's the thing to, you know, remember.
Yeah, because it seems like some parents are maybe kind of embarrassed to, you know, make a face, or, you know, coo real heavily, or really kind of interact in an animated fashion. I mean, that's really kind of what you need to do. And I think I remember seeing this a while back, that you should be talking to your baby all the time, that, you know, as a regular person, even though they're not talking back, because they're hearing your speech over and over again. And that's what you encourage basically your parents to do, right?
Absolutely. That you are narrating, and that falls under a lot of what we're going to talk about for the different age breakdowns for what parents can do, is to be talking to your child about the activities that are occurring around them and with them when you're dressing them, when you're feeding them. Sometimes you'll be at the grocery store and you will see there are the parents who are talking to their child as they go through the store. Of course, grocery store shopping with a child is like a whole nother conversation. But any activity where you can expose your child to new vocabulary, to the concepts around them, and help them learn the language that they're going to be using is, you know, what we want. There has to, of course, be quiet time. I mean, we can't talk 24/7 them. But, you know, I think you're right that some people think, well, I'm talking to a baby.
Right. They can't understand
me. The baby is not talking.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I want to know too, real quick, because we are going over a lot of information, that all of this that you're talking about, that this first section and all the different age groups, are all going to be on a blog post that we're going to have as well too. So if everyone is listed that's listening right now, if you're, you know, frantically writing it down, we're going to have it for you in a blog post, so you'll be able to read to it and refer back to it depending on what age, you know, your child is in at that particular moment. So we know we're going over a lot of information. We're going to try to have it documented on the blog as well too. So I forgot to mention that in the beginning, Lori, and I wanted to make sure that everybody understood that for sure. So
I think that's great. I think everybody should just try and listen for now, and then go back and look for more details after they've finished listening to the podcast.
Okay, absolutely. Perfect.
So for the activities that, you know, we suggest for parents birth to one-year-old children, they, you know, like you mentioned, of course, pay attention to your child. You want to reinforce your baby's communication by looking at him or her and speaking and imitating his or her vocalizations. And so you teach that child the reciprocity of the going back and forth. The baby will coo, and you will follow the baby's pattern, and the baby will follow you back. The baby will then maybe change its sound, and you follow the baby. And at some point in their early development, what happens is you can change the pattern, and the child will actually follow you. And so that would come probably at the end or the middle of this age range where you see the child starting to follow you. But that's actually an early conversational turn-taking behavior that we look for. And so,
okay, what would
imitation,
be, I'm sorry, what would be an example of that? So if I was going to do something and they were going to follow me back, what would that be?
Well, if the baby was cooing and doing ba-ba-ba and you did ba-ba-ba back, and then the baby changes to maybe ma-ma-ma, and you do ma-ma-ma back, and it goes back and forth where you're following the baby's pattern. If you went, as the child moves through the developmental stages, if you were to then change to maybe pa-pa-pa, and the baby follows you and changes to that consonant vowel, that's really how our speech develops, so that, you know, when babies are little, they have ba-ba-ba, and then eventually that becomes Bob off her bottle, maybe, and then the vowel changes at the end of the word, and you get baby, and then you get mama, and then you get mommy, and you get dada, and then you get daddy. That all develops through the progression of their sounds coming in and through imitation and the developmental process of moving through cooing to babbling and then into word formation. Right. Focusing on what your child is doing and imitating their sounds, and same thing with their laugh and their facial expressions, and going back and forth, making different faces. Babies love doing that. And then teaching them to imitate different actions. So the peekaboo, the clapping, the blowing kisses, itsy bitsy spider, any of the little hand songs that they can start doing gestures with them. And of course, always paying attention to your child's hearing and how they're attending so that you can be watching, you know, for possible ear infections, which is something we'll talk about, you know, after this section.
Right.
And then, as you mentioned, always talking about where you're going, who you're going to see, what you're going to do, and while you're doing their daily living activities, bathing and dressing and feeding them, talking about what you're feeding them, the utensils they're using, what clothes you're putting on them, and then describing things for them. So what color things are, what sizes they are, counting, even though, of course, they're not counting at this age, but exposing them to those concepts. And then this is a great time to teach what I call association sounds, and of course animal sounds. So the farm set, the jungle animals, and then I usually suggest, if you've got trucks and you've got the fire engine or a police car, that you use different sounds for each of those vehicles, so that a truck might honk, but a car would beep.
Okay.
And then you'd have a siren, things like different activities, pretending you're asleep and snoring, and different sounds that they might hear in the house, like a phone ringing, imitating that sound. And those are non-speech imitations, or I call them association sounds. So those are association sounds that are vocal, but they're not actual words. But if somebody were to hear their child making one of those sounds, then they would know, you know, what toy they might want, or that they understand that that sound goes with that object. So yeah. Those are all, and of course, I think I didn't mention, of course, reading to your child. So at that age, usually it's the hard cardboard books with one picture per page, so not too much going on, but enough for that child.
Yeah, because you're really building the neural pathways that at that moment, aren't you? I mean, the physiology behind this is the reason why you're doing this, is because, I mean, you're really starting to imprint now at this point.
Yeah,
from zero to one and on, you know, that's the reason why you know, the repetition is so good, and the association and all that, is because you're physically changing their brain.
Right, and children learn through repetition, and which is why they're able to watch the same things over and over again, where, you know, we're like, really, this is what you want to watch again,
right,
or this is what you want to read again, or
yep.
They will often have something that they're just really focused on, and because they learn through repetition, it's different for them, and it's still enjoyable for them, because they're getting different information maybe each time they watch it, and they're stabilizing, you know, different concepts and vocabulary and just different aspects of whatever it is that they're reading, or
sure.
Obviously as they're getting older, starting to watch movies, certainly not our 0 to 12 months, but for the 1 to 2 year old age range, things we want to look for in terms of hearing and understanding would be beginning to point to a few basic body parts when you ask them. So point to your nose, point to your head, where's your mouth, usually starting with their, you know, face, and then, you know, something, their hand, their foot. And then as they get older, we move into things like, you know, your chin, your cheek, your shoulders, but at the beginning, just their basic body parts. And they should start following and understanding simple commands and questions. So if you ask them to roll the ball to you, they'll roll it to you, or you've rolled it to them and you ask them to roll it back, or kissing the baby, if they have a baby doll, and where's your shoe, they might look around for it. They may not find it, but at least, you know, they're looking for it. Or if you ask them to get a book, they might walk over up to their shelf and pull a book and get that for you. And
so they
understand. You know, you've got the...
Yeah, they understand, but their first words are going to come at this time frame then, too?
Right. And there, again, there's a range. And most families, I think, look for first word around a year.
Okay.
Some children say their first word, you know, 9 months. Some say their first word after a year. So somewhere in this time range is definitely where we want to see expressive language starting to develop. And, you know, you would see it increase each month after that first word. One thing that I would want to make sure parents understand is that at this time, words may not be so perfectly clear because children don't have all their speech sounds yet. And so sometimes what I find is the parents don't hear those sounds as words. And so if you hear the same sound combination for the same object all the time, I would usually say that that is a word for that object because we don't know if that child has a speech sound problem at that point. But if it's consistent in terms of always saying, for instance, if a child says "abba," but it's always for apple, even though the P is not there and there's a B instead of a P, if that's always how that child says that word for that fruit, then I would count that as a word.
Okay.
And so sometimes I think the words are there, but we don't recognize them because we're new parents and we don't, it doesn't sound like what we expect it to sound like.
Yeah, and we don't want to identify it as a problem.
Right.
Right.
So, at this age, the child should be listening to simple stories and songs and some early rhyming and pointing to pictures in a book when you name it. So if you ask them to find, you know, the baby or find the hat or find the shoe, and these are the books that you've been using, they should be able to start pointing and following what you're asking for. And then expressively, like you said, they're going to be developing their first words if they haven't already. And then you should see growth in those words. Because to get phrases, which would also come about usually between maybe 18 months and 2 years, or at closer to 2 years, depending on your child, you have to have enough single words to make two-word phrases. So you need to have some nouns, you need to have some verbs, maybe some early adjectives or modifiers like more or negation for no. So if they don't want juice, that they can either shake their head for no or they're beginning to say no, and then maybe use the word for juice. Usually you can tell they don't want something.
Oh, right, right. And this is a
pretty clear.
Yeah, and this is a pretty wide age range, too, because we're talking 1 to 2 years, so this could be on the far
right.
side of 2 years.
A lot happens. Plenty of language development is going on during that 12-month period where you're going from possibly no words to two-word phrases in a 12-month period.
Wow.
And you'll hear lots of new consonant sounds coming in, which then, of course, makes more words available for that child. So, you know, as you get more consonants and you've got your vowels and you get more combinations of sounds, you can certainly make more words. And the things that we suggest for parents to do, the activities for parents to do, is, of course, continue talking to your child, as we described earlier, to use simple but correct grammar. So not necessarily what people would consider baby talk, but maybe short sentences with vocabulary that you would expect your child to have heard and be exposed to and that your child can imitate. You can start thinking about early phonics even at this time, pre-phonics, where you're doing the tick-tock sound maybe for a clock, or you're making this F sound for a snake, making different sounds when you're playing with toys again and expanding on those different sounds.
Sounds like always reading too, constantly reading, huh?
Always reading to your child. And then, and the books will change during this age range. So it might not be just a simple picture book, but there may actually be maybe a shorter story with one character doing several different activities. And you'd be describing, again, all of these things to your child, having your child point to the pictures. And then because your child is beginning to talk at this point or is talking at this point to get your child to name things for you as well. And so an easy way to work on that, I think we tend to always say, tell me what this is. But if you take turns, if you've built that turn taking in and you, oh, look, mommy or daddy found the puppy dog, and then you'll should see, you know, your child might just automatically, you know, if you say, what did you find, you know, is different than tell me what you see. So it's an indirect request to label something as opposed to direct, almost pressured kind of feeling, you know, tell me what you see, tell me what you see.
Oh, right.
Versus, oh, what do you see on this page? This is what mommy sees or this is what daddy sees. And so you can build in that turn taking that you've already started on when they were younger, and you're doing it in a natural way without really testing them. And if they don't know what it is, you know, you would, of course, model it, and then you could act again, or you could ask something different on that page. You know, I always encourage parents to remember to keep this so positive and to not focus necessarily on speech sound development, because sounds are just starting to come in and new sounds are coming in, but to really focus on the positive aspect of the communication interaction.
Okay. To have fun with it. I mean, to really make it something Definitely. That's enjoyable for you too, as the parent. I mean, you want to, you know, you don't want this to be some tedious, you know, drill that you're doing every night, you know, to really enjoy it and maybe be expressive
right.
with it. Okay. Okay. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think I hear a lot from parents who don't like to read out loud.
Well, they're uncomfortable with it, I guess, huh?
Right. A lot of parents say, you know, I really just don't want to read out loud. I'm not comfortable with reading out loud. And
wow.
I think once they start doing this, and so I usually say, well, just go in with your child and have, you know, your spouse not be in there, just one of you at a time. And you realize that your child is not judging your reading style, is not
right.
listening to see how well you read.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, I think we just all have that stand up in class and read out loud.
Sure, sure, sure.
Phobia.
Right.
Which is not the same as reading to your child. And so it should be fun and it should be, you know, cuddly, and it should just be a positive experience for both of you. And I think once we get used to it as new parents, you know, we do find how enjoyable it can be.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say then moving on to 2 to 3 years. So we've kind of gone through that 1 to 2 frame. Now it gets a little bit more sophisticated.
Right. And now we've got moving people who can, you know, who want to express themselves, don't have necessarily every word that they need to get everything that they want, but who are definitely full-fledged, you know, moving, communicating people. And so, you know, at 2, your child should be understanding basic opposite pairs, things like fast or slow. So if you say, you know, make the car go fast or make the car go slow, these are things that the child will demonstrate for you. And of course, up until this point, hopefully you've been playing and you've exposed your child to fast and slow. Maybe you've got a turtle going slow. You've got a horse running fast. You have somebody walking slowly. You've got somebody running fast. You're putting things in, you're taking things out, you're talking about big and little, you're talking about up and down, because they're always getting in their chair, they're getting out of their chair, they're maybe going up the steps and coming down the steps. And so you're using those in your natural environment, and those are concepts that your child should be picking up. And you want your child to be able to start following basic directions, where you're giving them now maybe 2 requests instead of just get the book, mm-hmm. maybe get the book and put it on the table, or get the book and give it to mommy, or get the book and give it to daddy.
Yeah, okay.
And listening skills, because, you know, when they're younger, they may just get the book and then walk into the other room. They don't always come right back to you. So now when you ask them to get the book, you can give them a second step, and they should start following those directions. And listening to longer stories, and certainly by 3, they will have developed favorite books for sure and different stories that they like to listen to, and they'll be able to go longer and really get enjoyment out of more of a storybook. And then expressively, we'd expect our 2 to 3-year-old children to have a large vocabulary and be able to ask for almost everything or have a word for almost everything and start using for sure phrases and two and three word combinations and really be talking. There are two-year-olds who are conversationalists, and there are two-year-olds that come and still have early phrase development. So again, the range may be large, but what we're looking for is increased understanding and increased use of language. And by three, between the two to three, again, more consonants come in. You should be able to understand your child most of the time. So their speech sounds should be clear enough for you to understand most of their words. Even if they have some errors, their pattern should be pretty consistent.
Okay.
So you might, parents can usually understand their children, but as they get older, you know, we start looking at would a stranger understand what this child is saying.
Because you talk little bit about getting rid of the baby talk speech.
Right.
Now
so
this
you're going to have bigger phrases, longer phrases, more grammar coming in, and clearer speech. But of course, even at two and three, the children don't have every consonant that they're going to develop by that time. So the speech sounds are still developing. I usually think that in general at age two, children should be understood at least 50% of the time.
Okay.
By three, we look at 75% of the time. And by four, we're looking at 90% of the time.
Oh, okay.
And you know, if you have contextual cues, that's going to help you. So if you know what the child's talking about, what their frame of reference is, then you can use some closure and fill in the sounds that may be missing. I think the real challenge comes when they come from the other room or they come home from preschool or from some being out of the house and come back in and you don't have those cues. And so you don't know what they're talking about. And that's sometimes where the challenges come about for parents.
Oh, okay. They're talking about their day and the parent doesn't know about their day. Is that what you're referring to?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And if they have some speech sound errors or they haven't quite developed a vocabulary that, you know, useful enough for them to express themselves, that will be where you might have more frustration on the part of the parent or the child. Because if you're in the same environment and you can add that context in,
sure,
then you usually will have less frustration on everybody's part.
Oh, right, right. And at this point, too, you're trying to get the child to really speak more. Like I know you had mentioned before when we were talking about, you know, not asking just yes and no questions, that you ask questions or you have conversations where you're trying to draw more out of them to get them to speak more and to be more descriptive, I guess, about, you know, that particular question or that particular topic that you're talking about, right? That's
absolutely
at that point. Okay.
Right. And I think the 2 to 3 year old really becomes quite the talker during that time period. There's a lot of development between 2 and 3 as well. And your child is going to be expanding what they're saying and showing interest in. And I think a little bit, we just touched on this, if you don't understand your child, if you can try and ask questions that help them maybe use a different word or show you what they're talking about, or encourage them to continue explaining it to you so you can try and get as much information. But you should always validate that you know that they're trying to tell you something, because everything they're trying to explain to you is usually important to them. And so you want that communicative importance to be there for them, even if you may not get all of their communicative information if you're having trouble understanding them. So their vocabulary, you know, of course, you want to keep reading to them, and now you'll start using synonyms and, like you said, describing and playing games that help them categorize different things. And so we talk about different foods, we talk about different animals, tools, maybe clothing, things in the bathroom, things in the kitchen. And you can just work your way around the house, of course, helping the child learn how to categorize different things.
Yeah, yeah.
And understand that there are categories. And that's, you know, a lot of how the early books are. You get a book on farm animals, you get a book on jungle animals, you may get a book on, you know, different foods or fruits and basic things that you find in the kitchen for them. And when you discuss, you know, describing and when you're combing their hair, and you may be using a comb or a brush. And then, as you said, asking them more questions, not just expecting a yes or a no, so that If you ask a yes or no question,
yeah,
you need to always be prepared for the no.
Uh-huh.
I always suggest to parents, if you're asking, do you want this or that, you need to be giving them two choices that, you know, you're going to be happy with either of the answers. But if you're saying, do you want to go to school or do you want to go to bed, and you aren't prepared for the no answer, then you might want to phrase it as, it's time for bed.
Okay.
As opposed to asking a question.
Okay.
But in terms of, you know, the language development, you could get them to make a choice. You know, what do you want to drink is not a yes or no question, but do you want milk is a yes or no question.
Oh, right,
and
right.
So if you want them to ask for juice, or you want them to ask you to open the refrigerator, you're going to have to leave them some space to actually need to request these things, as opposed to giving them everything and them not needing to really request or ask.
Yeah.
Or be specific.
Right, right, right.
And I think I actually had a mom this morning say her child had asked for a banana this morning on his own, and now she realizes that every morning she fixes, you know, his breakfast and never waits for him to ask for anything. And so I think, you know, that's how a lot of our houses are. You know, we're always anticipating.
Oh, right.
And providing, and there's really no need to request.
Yeah, and what a great opportunity to ask, you know, exactly
right,
what
we
they want.
Right, we want that opportunity, right, to be there, and we want to build that in so that they have some independence in terms of requesting different things and being able to communicate with us.
Oh, good deal. So moving on then to 3 to 4 years, now we're getting even more sophisticated.
We are. We now have children that could be heading to preschool,
uh-huh,
or definitely developing their peer relations, either at the park or in the neighborhood, cousins. So we have children that are going to be around other children their age, I think, a little more often, and playing with their friends. At this age, we'd expect a child to definitely hear us and respond to us when we call them from another room. I'm not saying they're always coming, but I'm saying that we should expect them to hear us, and they should respond either by coming in if that's what we teach them to do, or somehow verbalizing that they've heard you. When they're watching TV or listening to music, we want to make sure that they're not turning it up louder than the rest of the family, because, again, we'd be looking for ear infections and possible conductive hearing loss.
Okay.
We want our children at this age to be able to answer basic questions, because this is how they're going to be thinking in terms of forming their sentences. We want them to be able to answer a what question, a who question, a where question, and why at the very basic level.
In some detail. Okay, not just, you know, one-word answer.
Right. So usually it would be, who is doing what where? Dad is cooking breakfast in the kitchen.
Okay.
Or dad is driving in the car to work. So they're starting to put, you know, their nouns, their verbs, and then the where would be the prepositions, you know, in order, and they can, you know, express themselves in simple sentences. And that's what they're basically answering. So if you're looking at a picture and you see somebody swimming in a pool, you know, you would ask, who is swimming in the pool? And you might get girl. And then you might say, well, what is the girl doing? And you might get swimming. Where is she swimming in the pool? And then when you review all that, after you've looked at the picture, what you have is the girl is swimming in the pool. And that's what they're going to start connecting all of those pieces together. And so those are the types of sentences you'd be looking for from them. But that would be how they build to get that sentence.
Okay. Okay. And again, you're doing this through books. You can do that, pointing at pictures. You'd mentioned too about, you know, comparisons too. What's wrong with this picture? You know, a dog driving a car, things along those lines, right? I mean, definitely.
Right.
You're
going to start working on their abstract thinking and why things would be absurd. And children have, you know, great senses of humor. And so they love absurd pictures and silly pictures. And I think, you know, when you're doing, and because there are so many characters that are animals, sometimes it gets confusing, because, you know, we have the whole Disney family where Mickey is a mouse, but he is a character. But you have Pluto, who is a dog and not a character. he's walking on all four, and he remains a dog, whereas Goofy is a dog, but he's a character.
Right, right, right.
And so I try, and for me, what I usually do is, if it is a character, I will use a who question, but if it's a animal, I would use a what question.
Oh, okay.
Because animals are not whos, but characters tend to be personified, so we need to use who with them.
Okay.
And so at 3 to 4, we'd really be expecting a child to be able to talk about recent events, come home and tell you about school, tell you something that happened at the park, tell you something that happens upstairs if you're not upstairs and they are with, you know, a sibling or with, you know, a friend or a parent. And then being understood, as we talked about, by people outside of the family, you know, 75% at age 3, 90% at age 4. This is not to say that every child is going to be speaking perfectly with no speech sound problems at this age, because that's not accurate. They will have some speech sounds that still need to solidify, and they may have a speech articulation problem that will be addressed sometime in the future. If you have a child that has a lot of speech sound errors at this age, that might be a reason for a speech language evaluation at this age.
Okay.
So
okay.
That they're talking a lot, but nobody understands them. One of the red flags that we look for in terms of a possible evaluation.
Okay. Okay. And then at this age range too, I mean, books primarily, and then conversations that you have with them are going to be your two, probably your best tools, would you say?
Yes, I would say that. That would be, they're very inquisitive at this age, and they're little sponges soaking up everything that passes by them. They basically can't walk past things without touching them. Their play is going to start really developing, and that's something that we haven't really talked about, but play, symbolic routines, is how we see what they're thinking. So if they're feeding a baby, if they're feeding their animals, if they're helping their animals go to sleep, if they're developing those routines, that lets us see their early language development, their sequencing skills, and those are skills that we really want to facilitate. So at this age range, a lot of times you'll see all those little people toys.
Uh-huh.
The different sets with the, you know, the farmer and the community helpers and the animals, the food trough, the barn, whatever. Those sets are perfect for this age range for play.
Okay.
Because it helps them develop their symbolic play, and we can really help them develop their early abstract thinking.
Okay. Okay. And then moving on to 4 and 5 years now. So now it gets even more involved or more sophisticated. So
right.
So you really, I mean, at this point, they're turning into little people.
Right. And they could be heading up to kindergarten, depending on what state you're in.
Okay.
I don't know. Not everybody is starting at 5 anymore, but certainly a lot of children, I think, still start kindergarten at 5. Definitely eligible for preschool if they haven't already been. And so we've got some really good, solid language skills that should be set, and these children should be paying attention to stories more, answering and asking questions, being able to explain in more detail what's happened to them during the day, maintaining the topic when they're telling a story. So not just, again, here you see the sequencing. So there would be a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Okay.
Not just this happened here, and then here's the next thing that happened, and having a lot of disjointed. I'm not saying that doesn't happen.
Right,
but,
right.
But, you know, we're looking forward to progress into more of a storytelling conversation.
Okay.
Again, one of the great activities to do with a child this age is working on sequencing cards. You can take pictures of your child doing different activities, you know, making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, slicing an apple, going to the park, and having that beginning, middle, and end, and then having them tell back to you, you know, what they did, put the cards in order so that they can learn that sequential concept. Again, more opposites are going to be coming in. Their describing should really be increasing. You can play games where you describe things, and they have to find them, and then they describe things, and you have to find them. You're still working on categories. You're working on sorting more into subcategories. So now it's not just this is an animal and this is a food, but these are zoo animals, these are pets, these are jungle animals, these are animals you find at the zoo.
Okay.
And so you'll get your subcategories in each of the larger language categories.
Like two-step directions, I think you mentioned too, where you give them, it's a two-step type of thing they have to follow, do one
right.
thing and then the next.
Right. And the way I usually say to build on the directions is you first you would give, you know, a request with one action and one object, get the book. And then we talked about get the book, give it to me. But now you're going to actually expand it where you have two different actions with two different objects. So you might ask your child to take your coat off and then help you find the keys, or put their coat on, help you find the keys. So you have two distinct actions with two different objects. And so you're really expanding what they have to remember. Usually they're going to be connected and it's going to be in context. So that'll really help them, remember what you're asking them to do. And then of course there's the board games will come in at this age. And I think most 5-year-old birthdays are often heavily laden with board games.
Right, right.
And so there's a lot of different early games that come out, and board games are perfect ways to really build on that turn-taking, waiting your turn, handling setbacks if you're not winning.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, early sportsmanship, thanking the other person for playing with you, whether you've won or you've lost, and really just trying to have a social interaction with the game as, you know, the object that you're both dealing with.
Right.
And then letting the child start planning things with you, making lists. They love making lists. Making a list for their birthday party, always a favorite thing.
Oh.
And then again, you can be building on categorizing, because you'd be talking about, well, what do we need to get from the food?
Right.
You know, from the grocery store. What kinds of things do we need to get to decorate?
What games would you like to play?
What games would you like to play? And then, of course, there's the theme of the party. And so you're going to then, by this point in that child's life, be using all of the skills that you've been so diligently working on and watching develop.
Yeah.
And now you've got, you know, a 5-year-old who is really able to express themselves, able to tell you what they want and don't want, and tell you when you're right and when you're wrong, and you know, all those different good things that 5-year-olds can do.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully have some of those pre-academics built in there with the colors and the number concepts and, you know, exposure to the written language, and then, you know, be ready to head off to school.
Right.
Another traumatic event.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Well, best of luck and congratulations again on 20 years. With the Children's Communication Center, all the hard work I know that you have behind it, you really should be proud, and thank you for everything that you do.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right. And thank you to all of you out there listening today. That's it for our show. All of Lori's information can be found in our show notes section of our blog for this podcast. So if anyone has any questions, please feel free to put them in the discussion forum. We'd love to answer them. That's it for us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.